Welcome to Blogging Heads. I'm Gabriel Arana, and I'm a senior editor at the American Prospect magazine in Washington, D.C. Joining me today is Josh Seafried. He's an active duty first lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force. He's also an LGBT rights advocate. As one of the founders of OutServe, he was instrumental in the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the military policy which for 16 years barred gays and lesbians from serving openly. Did I get your credentials right, Josh?
Yes.
All right, so this month marks 3 years since Congress and President Obama repealed the law. To mark the occasion of the prospect, I have a profile of Lieutenant Dan Choi, who, along with you, was one of the visible proponents for the repeal. Josh and I will be talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as well as how the military is holding up now that gays can serve openly. So since your story is so interesting, Josh, I thought we could start off by talking a little bit about yourself.
Sounds good.
So you served in the military under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. What was that like?
Yeah, I served 4 years at the Air Force Academy under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then about 2 years under the policy, active duty after graduating. It was an incredibly stressful time, obviously. At any time someone could find out about you, someone could turn you in, and you'd lose everything that you'd worked for at any time. And it just creates such a huge burden on yourself to have to live with that and risk losing everything you've worked for your whole life so far. It's incredibly stressful.
So I'm always really curious about, and in doing research for the profile of Dan Choi, I also talked to a lot of members of the military who served under the policy, including you. And I'm always curious about the ways that people hid, the sort of things that you had to think about. So do you remember, you know, ways in which you had to watch your back?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the ways that, you know, I always kind of watch my back is during my time at the Air Force Academy, I kind of had a girl that everyone thought I was dating, but, you know, she was just a very close friend that would attend functions with me and knew I was gay, but she kind of just always played that girlfriend card. And it was kind of, because, I mean, you get asked the question all the time, are you seeing anyone? What did you do last weekend? So if you have kind of a fallback person, you can always kind of you know, say this is who I'm dating. It allows you to get away with it. So that's something that I always had to do, is have kind of like a default girlfriend that existed.
So did you have any relationships with guys while you were in the military?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I dated while I was at the Air Force Academy and after graduation under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It's incredibly stressful. I remember having relationships where, you know, I'd be in the same room with him and we'd have to text each other because, you know, we couldn't obviously talk to each other, or, you know, you have to hide being seen together all the time. So it's definitely a very stressful thing to have to hide all the time.
And so were you ever in danger of being kicked out?
Yeah, after I graduated from the Air Force Academy, I was at technical training school where my instructor blackmailed me and ended up turning me in for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He was a civilian, so he wasn't really at risk for himself at all. Mm-hmm. And it kind of started my time in activism because I was, you know, now in trouble with the policy myself. But Secretary Gates, as soon as I got turned in, had come up with a new policy that would stop third-party outings, which ended up saving me from the policy taking effect on me.
So what was that? What does that mean, third-party outings? Just
So someone else turned you in. So, like, I didn't admit the policy. Any boyfriend didn't admit the policy. Just someone that's maliciously outing you to kind of get revenge on you. And that's what my case was.
So in the lead up to the repeal, there were a lot of doomsday predictions, and the supposed reason for the policy was to ensure military readiness and unit cohesion. I know that sort of sounds ridiculous, but what was the thinking behind that?
I mean, we heard everything from, you know, there'd be open revolts to riots to massive people not reenlisting. And as we can see, none of that happened. You know, it's none of it came true at all. So it was kind of the way for people to say, you know, let's keep the gays in the closet still, because, you know, people won't accept it, but it's just been the exact opposite. Mm-hmm.
So given that you're still in the military, what has changed for you? Have you noticed any difference?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I would say that all of our job performances definitely do better. You're not stressing about this policy anymore. And you're just generally happier. And I think at the fundamental base of the military, you have to have trust among your unit and the people you work with. And under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you really didn't have that because you're always lying. Now that's changed. And so people, you know, can see a difference in you. And I think people even notice that with me. If people say, you know, after the policy change, they just notice something that's different about you. And so I think the military is, you know, drastically improved because of this policy change.
Yeah, one of the, so there's a social psychologist at UC Berkeley who has studied the effects of, it's called concealment, concealing your sexual orientation, and it actually affects cognitive performance as well as physical performance. So one of the experiments they did was have test subjects conceal their sexual orientation for about 10 minutes, and then afterward, they have them perform a variety of tests, and one of them was gripping an exercise hand grip, and they did 20% worse. Which the theory behind it is that if you're spending all of these resources concealing your sexual identity, you have less to dedicate to, to your job. You've spoken about the stress that you felt. Did you feel it affected your performance?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's when you're on the job and, you always have to be at risk about, what you being turned in, it's going to definitely affect your job, especially when you get asked the question on a weekly basis, hey, what did you do this last weekend? Mm-hmm. And you have to lie about what you did. So absolutely it affects your performance because you have to consistently lie to protect your job.
Yeah, it seems that, I haven't been in the military, but it seems that under the policy, you sort of had to craft an alternate version of yourself in order to present to present to your colleagues. So I'm brushing up on our talk. I went back and looked at some of the outraged comments from opponents of repealing the law. And I think this is my favorite. It's from Brian Fisher of the Family Research Council. And he's railing against President Obama. So he says it's no secret that President Obama has a visceral dislike of America. That he believes America is incurably, irredeemably racist in its very DNA, and that the house must be torn down and rebuilt from the ground up, according to his twisted, utopian, socialist, anti-American, anti-Christian vision. That's a mouthful, but here's the key part. If America is to be brought down, our military must be emasculated, neutered, feminized, and weakened beyond repair. So, sheesh. So when you were advocating for the repeal, did you hear a lot of stuff like that?
Yeah, and I mean, Brian Fisher, made plenty of comments about me as well. It's ridiculous. I mean, we clearly have seen the policy's done nothing. It's just a straight up lie. I mean, it's just too ridiculous to even, it's just ridiculous. I mean, there's not even a way to respond to it anymore just because it was just so out of right field.
So when Clinton first signed the law in 1993, it was considered a compromise. Before that, gays and lesbians were not allowed in the military, and you were asked when you signed up, and tell me if I get this right, and under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you were no longer asked, but it was a matter of military policy as well as law that you'd be kicked out if you were found out. And there's been a lot of controversy in the gay rights movement about whether that was in fact a compromise that moved things forward, or if it sort of put in place discrimination that, it wrote discrimination into the law in a way that was actually harder to overcome in the future. Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I was in first grade when the compromise was created. So I don't know the thinking of the activists at the time or the policymakers at the time. I think it definitely created a barrier, which was harder to overcome, in the fact that Congress has gotten involved. And so it required, congressional action to reverse rather than a simple DOD policy. It's like transgender service right now. Congress isn't involved in it, so we can, you know, change the policy just by working with the DOD. Whereas, you know, if, say, Congress gets involved in that policy and puts an all-out ban there, it would create kind of the same situation with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, where it's going to create a harder barrier to overcome. So, I mean, and I think that from what I understand, too, at the time, the gay rights movement really wasn't organized here in D.C., you know, that much in 93 out of the compromise, you know, the Service Members Legal Defense Network was created, which became one of the largest advocates of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So I think at the time, you know, the gay rights movement wasn't exactly organized either to really fight back against any kind of policy. So, you know, I think we all wish Don't Ask, Don't Tell would have been created. And, you know, they would have just either, you know, continued to let the policy fall eventually. But, I mean, it definitely ended up creating a longer time to repeal the policy because here's the United States, one of the last countries in the Western world to change the policy.
So what's the story for transgender people who want to enter the military? What's the policy there?
I mean, right now the DOD has a ban on it. So, I mean, if you come out as transgender, you're going to lose your job. But again, that's all within the DOD. Congress is not involved in the policy at all. So the DOD has the ability to change this right now, you know, without Congress acting. And so that's what's, you know, happening right now. And I think what's going to have to happen for the transgender movement within the military is that is very similar to the path of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, is that there needs to be a narrative out there that trans folks are serving now. People know, and it's not an issue within their units. And I think that story needs to be told to help show, you know, the DOD needs to change the policy. And I think ultimately you're going to have situations like Dan Choi where people are going to have to out themselves to tell those stories. Because I don't think we've had those kind of advocates within the military step out of the closet yet. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to have to eventually kind of happen while also not getting Congress involved.
Were you one of the people who added yourself in order to advocate for repeal?
No, I was actually one of the people that stayed closeted until repeal actually took effect. Mm-hmm. I contemplated, there was a time I was very, very close after the first repeal vote failed. Mm-hmm. In the Senate. I actually was already coordinating with 2020 to do the piece, then backed out. Because I thought that, you know, with my work with OutServe, if I had outed myself, the social network we had created to help service members connect with one another could be put at risk. Mm-hmm. And that was just too important to me because people had finally for the first time a way to connect with each other and talk to each other. And I had to put that first. So...
So can you talk a bit about what you did with OutServe? So tell viewers what OutServe is and how it came to be and, you know, what your game plan was for fighting against Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, OutServe, which is now OutServe SLGN, is the largest employee resource group in the world dedicated to LGBT employees, periods. It's got over 6,000 members, and what it does is it seeks to create a network in which people can now connect. So under Don't Ask, Don't Tell existed, say I moved from Philadelphia to San Francisco. I then could, you know, have a social network when I moved to find and meet other gay military members. And it continues to do that to this day and continues to grow only quicker. It also worked during Don't Ask, Don't Tell to serve as the main medium between gay troops and the Pentagon when they were trying to study the effects of repeal. So it was my job to work with RAND, which was the corporation looking at the study to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and link them up with gay troops to talk to the effects of repealing the policy. And that network gave the Pentagon and the White House the ammo that they needed to say that this policy is not going to be a problem when it's repealed.
One of the most interesting things I found in doing the research for the piece was the sheer cost of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There are various estimates about how much it costs the military, and I think that the RAND Corporation, which you mentioned, did one. One estimate I saw said that it cost about, I think it was $28,000 for every enlisted soldier who was kicked out under the policy, and over $100,000 if the person was an officer. I think overall it cost over $400 million. Is that work you worked on with Rand?
Yeah, and I mean, and I also think that what that study didn't take to account was the people that didn't want to return or stay in the military. Mm-hmm. When I was at the Air Force Academy, I at first wanted to do a pilot position, but ended up not wanting to because I would have to stay under Don't Ask, Don't Tell longer. And so I wanted to opt for the shorter time commitment. So there's a lot of people in the military that were just, hey, I did 5 years under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I would stay, but because of the policy, I'm getting out. And so there's the military wasting all their time on their training when they could have kept them. So I think that there's a larger cost that we'll never realize totally how much this policy hurts the military or hurt the military.
So another disagreement in the repeal movement was whether to, so Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, but in its stead, there isn't a non-discrimination protection. I'm not sure whether OutServe supported repeal without also including non-discrimination protections. Did it?
Well, the position that I have now on this is that it was a mistake. The non-discrimination policy is something that we need, and we need it soon, and it can also be done with a stroke of a pen. The DoD can implement this stuff on their own. A good example you might have seen in the news recently is the Air Force Academy hired an ex-gay therapist that evaluates their effectiveness of a coaching and counseling program at the Air Force Academy. This story broke about 2 weeks ago, and you know what the story did was end up exposing the fact that there's a cultural problem. I recently visited the Air Force Academy when the story was coming out, and when I sat down with the gay cadets, they could only identify about 6 male cadets that were out and open at the Air Force Academy. That's a culture problem. The military repealed the policy, but then just left it alone. No training, no way to report discrimination, and that's ended up kind of closeting people again. And so I think that the military does really need to lead on this issue and say, hey, we're going to come forward with a non-discrimination policy, but we're also going to do some effective training to help the changing atmosphere, because you can't just repeal a policy after, the military's existence to say that, hey, we're not going to discriminate against gays anymore, but gays, you're on your own. And that's what's happening right now, is that there's no training, no policies to protect us. And I think that that's not a good idea.
There's also, Congress is debating the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would cover, which wouldn't just cover those in the military, would cover employment more generally, because now in a number of states, it's okay to fire.
It actually does not cover the military at all.
It doesn't? Okay.
No, it does not.
So that would do nothing for it.
Correct.
The military policy could be changed without legislation from Congress. Is that right?
Correct.
And what's the pushback been there? Why hasn't it been done already? Is it just hasn't been made a priority? Is there active opposition?
No, I don't think there's much active opposition at all. I just don't think there's been any substantial push to get this done. I mean, I think that the military saw just repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell as a monumental step, and they thought it was kind of like, just good enough. I think one of the things that we lost during the repeal process was that, there's no studies going on about how this policy change is even affecting the military and affecting culture. And that's what kind of the ammo we need to show, hey, there are some issues. There's not these riots. There's not these, massive problems that the doomsday predictions happen, but it doesn't change the fact that there's still people that, are going to discriminate within the military. And, that needs to be changed. So I think there needs to be a larger push to push for gay people being a protected class within the military and having avenues such as equal opportunity. It's just silly that we haven't been able to get this yet.
So can you now kick people out for being gay? Or this has not been clear to me. So I know that under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you had to launch an investigation, even though informally a lot of military leaders would find out about somebody in their unit troop. What's the right terminology there? and would choose not to report the person because they needed them. But it's not clear to me whether repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell makes it so that you cannot be fired for being gay. Is that the case? You know better than I do.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just a person can't, you know, come out and just say, "Hey, you're gay. I'm going to kick you out." I think like this goes off of the equal opportunity argument we were just talking about. You know, there's other ways. Say you have a very homophobic commander. There's ways to force people out of the military for other reasons besides just being gay, and you know it can be done. So I think that a commander does have a lot of influence to do that kind of stuff, to discriminate. And say there's a young airman out there that, you know, the commander does try to kick him out for other reasons besides just being gay. You know, that airman should have the opportunity to go to equal opportunity to file a complaint or something. And that avenue does not exist right now.
So one of the scenarios that opponents of the repeal brought up over and over again was what to do about the showers, which I always thought was sort of funny, paranoid. There was talk initially about segregating showers, which thankfully the military chose not to do. But maybe this is kind of personal, but has that been an issue? Or is it like when I go to the gym and shower time, exercise time is not checking people out time?
Well, first of all, the showers argument was always silly because RAND, within their study, had shown that I think it was like 92% of showers in the military are closed. Like, they're not, you know, even the showers on submarines are, you know, private. So it was such a stupid argument to begin with. But, I mean, it is. It's just an idiotic position to think that, you know, shower time is time to check out people. It's just an idiotic position, because no matter what, even under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you're still showering with gay people. You just don't know it. So it's just an idiotic argument.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining me, Josh. This has been great. And thanks to all our viewers. And if you want to check out the piece, which is both about Dan Choi and the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era, it's at prospect.org. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.